about some work that I've done with various people, including Damson, Ginseng, who is now a postdoc at McGill, and also Logan Ayagam, who is now a postdoc at IIS in Princeton, and recently Paul Wigman from Chicago. And it will be about transport properties in the hydrodynamic regime of veil fermions that basically exhibit gauge and mix anomalies. So what is the motivation? As you all probably know, hydrodynamics is a very useful universal theory that can describe various physical systems, including heavy ion collisions and condensed matter systems. And to understand anomalous properties of this system, like a new theory had to be developed. And for a long time, people did not appreciate that anomalies have something to do with transport properties, even though it's sort of classical phenomenon, and a priori there is no reason that it shouldn't be. Nevertheless, I think mainly because of Landau, people thought that this is unphysical, and I tried to convince you that this is not the case. And by now there is a lot of evidence that the picture can be made quite complete, and including kinetic theory with anomalies, partition functions, and even like some simple solvable models, like 1+1 dimensional, where we have like really control under entropy and anomalies. And recently, what I've been thinking about is basically whether one can sort of have something non-relativistic, and there has been some amount of work, mainly by Paul Wigman and Sasha Abanov, that basically in 2+1 dimensional models with vorticity, they managed to show that the system exhibits anomaly. And there is some hope that the same can be generalized to 3+1 dimensions. So let me give you some picture how the story goes. So imagine you have these two blobs of heavy ions. They collide, and then there is this cigar-type shape in the middle that contains chiral particles. And basically, at some point of the evolution, can be described by hydrodynamics, which means that there is energy-momentum tensor, there is conserved currents, and they obey certain conditions, consistency conditions. And then one can show that these currents are actually not arbitrary, but their transport is basically fixed by anomalies, and the transport coefficients can be analytically given by this form for the so-called chiral vortical effect, and in this form for the chiral magnetic effect. So let me show you how it works. So imagine you have hydrodynamics, then we can write down the conservation laws. Basically, we have the conservation law of energy momentum tensor, and we have assumed that there is finite charge density. So in addition, we have finite, we have this current conservation. And then the hydrodynamics tells us that energy momentum tensor and the current can be written down in the gradient expansion, which is an asymptotic series. It's gradients in the velocities and other thermodynamic quantities. And each gradient describes one order in the hydrodynamic expansion. And I will show that the anomalies actually are related to the first order in the derivatives, which is pretty good because it's at the same level as, for example, shear viscosity, because other transfer properties like relaxation times are second orders and therefore difficult to measure. and we can sort of fix the frame, which in this case is chosen to be the Landau frame. That means that the projection of the first order of the energy momentum tensor on the velocity field basically vanishes. But it's not necessary to do that. One can work in general frame or like some particular frame, let's say Eckhart frame or like adiabatic frame, and the story holds. So how does it work? Let's say we take Landau's book and then ask if we have hydrodynamics, what is the entropy current of that system? And to do that, we need to add together two conservation laws with some coefficients and then play with thermodynamic identities and show that if we have perfect fluid, which means this is zero, this is zero, this is zero, then what we call the entropy current is conserved and and gives zero. However, if we have first-order corrections, then there is some corrections to this conservation of the entropy current, and because of the dissipation, the entropy is produced. Now we can imagine that our fluid is made of chiral particles, which basically means that we can add to our system, to our expansion terms, which basically break parity. And one such terms is basically the relativistic generalization of vorticity. And as you see, there is this Levi-Civita symbol here, which can be both positive and or negative. So if we just take this, we are in trouble because in principle, this may violate the second law of thermodynamics, which we don't want. That's why the idea is to save the second law and maybe redefine the entropy current in such a way that the contribution on both sides coming from this parity breaking terms is zero. So if we have just vorticity, then it turns out it's not enough to constrain the equations. However, we can imagine that we have a non-zero background magnetic field, and then our conservation laws get corrected, so the energy momentum tensor and the current are not conserved. And we see that the non-conservation is basically proportional to the anomaly, the quantum field anomaly that is in the system. And then we push this idea that we redefine the entropy current, namely, we add some function d that we want to determine and times vorticity plus some other functions dB times the magnetic field contribution. And this b mu also contains the Levi-Civita symbol, which means that it breaks parity. And then it turns out that using some hydrodynamic identities, we can actually find the d and dB functions, and also we can find the transport coefficient in the current J, which is precisely of this form. And we see that there is this anomaly coefficient in front. So if we turn on magnetic field, constrain the system, and then turn it off, even though there is no anomaly, so the conservation laws are again restored, the system sort of knows about underlying anomaly because the transport has to be constrained. There is this C anom in front. So that's like a very general universal result, which is in principle non-sensitive if we flow with the RG flow. So there is some hope that these properties can be found in like both weakly and strongly coupled system. And one comment is that such a behavior was first found in the ADS-CFT correspondence. That's why people realize that this is not completely wrong, and that Landau perhaps was not general enough, and that there might be some transport. So once we have this, let's try to understand what else can we say about such systems. And one other thing we can do is basically include the gravitational anomaly. So in four dimensions, there is no pure gravitational anomaly. However, there is a mixed anomaly. So in the action, this means that there is terms like A wedge, R wedge R. And using ADS-CFT, we can compute the response. And this Kubo formula is basically giving you the gravitational response. So we have also part coming from the gravitational anomalies in our current. And this is the conventional magnetic field response. So we see that basically there is some response that is proportional to density squared. So this is chiral chemical potential. That's due to gauge anomalies. But there is some finite temperature piece that comes if we include gravitational anomalies. So now let me try to understand that using a semi-classical picture. And this is possible because, as I told you, the transport in principle is non-sensitive to the RG. So we can use weakly coupled methods also to derive it and then say that it holds. So I will try to use kinetic theory to generate the partition function responsible of this parity breaking transport. So what is kinetic theory? Kinetic theory deals with the evolution of the so-called distribution function in the phase space. And then we can write down a measure on that phase space. And if there is no Berry phase, so that's like the first try, but it will turn out that actually the Berry phase is very important for that story. So just to introduce the kinetic theory, that if there is no Berry phase, then the measure is of this form. And then if we integrate it out over the phase space, it will give the particle number. So now to derive other hydrodynamic objects, we sort of do the same, but with more complicated objects with proper indices. So let's say we want to calculate the relativistic energy momentum tensor using kinetic theory. So what we do, we put this on shell, we work out the normalization, and then we put two momenta because we need two indices, and then we integrate this with the particle distribution function. So let's say if we use Fermi distribution function and integrate it out, then we'll get the perfect fluid for fermions. So naively, what we should do, we should basically correct this, so add like some small perturbation in our distribution function, and then expect that the integration with that new corrected distribution function will give us first order hydrodynamics. So this will be perfect fluid piece times the first order. And actually this works very well in the case of shear transport. So this piece indeed gives the hydrodynamics with shear viscosity. However, in the case of anomalous hydrodynamics, it doesn't work. So what is the problem? So you see that if we integrate the distribution function to get the energy momentum tensor and the current, the piece that is basically first order in the derivative is linear. However, if we want to calculate the entropy current, then we have to integrate Boltzmann H function and plugging that corrected F to the Boltzmann this corrected F to the Fermi distribution function and to the H function, it doesn't produce the anomalous hydrodynamics. So there is no way the energy momentum tensor and the current can be reproduced. And it's a matter of observation to notice that if this was basically linear in the first order gradients, that would work. So the idea is then that perhaps it's not the distribution function that is modified, but somehow that the integration measure is different for anomalous theories and for non-anomalous theories. And having some insight from condensed matter, it will turn out that this is because of the non-zero Berry phase in the system. And one side comment is that this anomalous contribution to the current is basically helicity current. So this means that if we have particles with different chiralities, they will flow in two different directions. And this also opens a possibility to basically study non-relativistic hydrodynamics and expect that there might be some anomalies because there is known the so-called swirling vortices in which basically the net helicity is non-zero, and it might be potentially useful to use that to, for example, separate the chiral species. And I found that this is actually an important problem in some areas of chemistry. But let's stay in this kinetic theory picture, and let's say we want to restrict ourselves to two dimensions, because then we actually can solve the system exactly. So basically, we take the Weyl fermion Lagrangian. We basically derive the distribution function. We impose the holomorphicity, and then we can generate the function, the Gibbs current, which is like the generating function. And here, this is somewhat maybe confusing notation, but this is basically taking the Hodge duals so that I don't have Levi-Civita symbols all around. Anyway, the message is that we get, again, some anomalous piece, which is basically one is from gauge anomalies, the other one is from gravitational anomalies. One can easily see that in this formulation, this is precisely the gravitational anomaly, this is the gauge anomaly. And now
what happened in higher dimensions? It's because it's still free fermions, right?
Yes, exactly.
So we can't write down this functional
matter. We can. Yeah, that's why at this level, it's a guesswork. but still you can guess the form in, let's say, all even dimensions. And that's also because, as you see here, the story is somewhat similar to anomalies in zero temperature. So in zero temperature, you have this anomaly polynomials that basically can give you all the coefficients of anomalies in any dimensions that was worked out in 80s. And let's say we want to do the same. So we want to generalize that to higher dimensions. So now, let's say you see this, and then you write down the same, but in terms of anomaly polynomials. And now you see that if you make the substitution, so f goes to mu, and then this is the so-called Pontryagin class. If this goes to the first Pontryagin class, if this goes to t squared, then basically we can reproduce the finite density, finite temperature transport in terms of anomaly polynomials, which is like very strong topological result. And then one new ingredient is that we have to modify the measure of our integration space.
So what is the script R?
That's the VG scalar. So that's forms, basically. So this is F form, this is R form. So this is because of gauge anomaly, this is because of gravitational anomaly. And then you see that if you introduce this object, which we call chiral spectral current, of this form, then we can exactly reproduce all the results that we have and generate all the transport properties in even dimensions using our kinetic theory prescription. And now the question is how to understand this piece. And okay, so before I do that, let me give you some examples. So I can write down explicitly the expansion in all even dimensions. So let's take a few first dimensions. So that's 2D. That's the simplest case, and there is no magnetic field involved. Here it's the four-dimensional case. So you see there is one term that is proportional to the gauge anomaly. And okay, this is, again, finite density. And there is one piece that is proportional to the gravitational anomaly. And the whole thing is basically multiplied by the vorticity wedge U. And here is the term due to magnetic field. And then it turns out that the vorticity story is crucial. So in all the examples, even in 2D, which at first sight is not like vorticity, but in some sense it is rotation along the thermal cycle. So to see the anomalies, you always have to turn on non-zero vorticity or some kind of rotation in our system, and it will become clear in a few slides when I talk about this using heat kernels. So now, this is more for the condensed matter community. Let's say I want to understand better this factor here. So it turns out that this is something that condensed matter people work out. So suppose we have some Hamiltonian that depends on the on a set of parameters and is adiabatic. So then there is this quantum adiabatic theorem that says that the only degree of freedom that is there is basically the phase. And knowing that, we can define a very connection in our system, and then we have a non-zero Barry curvature. So now, if we consider the theory of non-relativistic electrons, so that's semi-classical approach due to Bloch and his collaborators, we can write down this simple Lagrangian. We have usual connection, and then we have the Barry connection in the momentum space. And then if we derive the equation of motion, we see that there is this non-zero correction to the space evolution. And it's precisely due to the fact that we have non-zero Barry connection. And that was, let's say, the big achievement of condensed matter theory. And it's now under the name the anomalous Karplos-Luttinger correction to velocity. And now, suppose we take this system of electrons and want to calculate what is the modification of our phase space. So what we have to do is basically we have to calculate the time evolution of the change of the volume of our phase space in the presence of non-zero Barry connection. And after some algebra, which is slightly tedious, but nevertheless it's doable, one can check that this dV is of this form. And in order to make the system preserving the number of particles in a given volume, we need to modify the density of states in this particular way. And this is our sort of intuitive understanding why this modification has to be made here. So I would say this is like a higher dimensional analog of that non-trivial Barry phase factor in the phase space. And actually by now, there is some examples work out. So Damson and his postdoc wrote a paper in which they study a system with a non-zero Barry phase, and precisely they derive the triangle anomaly from that. So I would say that this gives the explanation why such a quantity is there. And you also see that this is sort of a classical phenomenon. So even though the kinetic theory deals with like quantized particles, we always have this vorticity factor here, which is basically macroscopic quantity, and it's some kind of average object. So I would say that this gives some evidence that anomalies are really like connected to the IR classical physics rather than purely quantum phenomena.
Sorry, but the Barry phase is a quantum thing. What do you mean exactly?
I mean, you can arrive to anomalies in many different ways, and of course, you know, one way to arrive at it is basically to calculate Feynman diagrams. And you see that you cannot regularize properly. But in some sense, what I'm saying that this is IR physics. So I would say it's like a property of your classical phase space rather than quantum property of your system. And the way it's maybe not phrased this way is, for example, because like fermionic Grassmannian phase space is just difficult to realize at the classical level. However, here it's like hydrodynamics. So in some sense, it doesn't care about fermionic degrees of freedom. There is some average. And this manifests itself through this magnetic field or vorticity, which is like a classical object. So that's why it looks a bit puzzling at first sight, because usually what people do in kinetic theory, they have like particle distribution in your phase space, and a priori I would expect that there shouldn't be an object like vorticity or hydrodynamic velocity, because that's something you can basically derive from your semi-classical quantum rules. But in this case, somehow you have to put it. Otherwise, I don't know how to.
I think like the systems, like purely classical systems, like a couple of gyroscopes with springs, you can have analogs of various physics. So it's not so crazy that you can actually capture this with a purely classical hypothesis.
Yeah, so here the very phase basically sits in the momentum space. So it's like you have a monopole in the momentum space, basically. That's, and it's exactly what you have in this simple model. So that's your non-zero Berry connection, and there is a monopole in the momentum space. Yes. Okay, and the last part of my talk is basically devoted to heat kernels. And why do I find it interesting? So there is several things heat kernels are good for. For example, people calculated entanglement entropy using heat kernels. And having this anomalous formulation in terms of heat kernels might shed some new light on how entanglement entropy is basically corrected. And unfortunately, so far I have only 1+1 dimensional case. So in this case, we have answers. And for example, Alejandra wrote a very nice paper about how anomalous entanglement entropy arises, both in the field theory side and in holography. But I think there is some chance that one can generalize that to higher dimensions. So let me explain how does it work. So suppose I want to calculate this partition function. And to expect anomalies, I have to impose certain boundary conditions. So I have both thermal and spatial periodicities. And basically, I'm on a 1+1 dimensional torus. I have this parameter tau, which can be related to the radius of the torus and the inverse of the temperature. And then I ask myself whether this partition function can give me the anomalous contribution. And there has been some work. And for example, in the 90s, people studied that. And all the results they get was basically zero. And there is a very particular reason for that. So what usually people do, they calculate the heat kernel using the heat kernel expansion, and that works very well for the zero temperature anomalies, because the anomaly then is governed by the index, so it's like low expansion basically tells you about zero temperature anomalies. However, it turns out that finite temperature, finite density anomalies are more tricky. So you cannot basically just expand the heat kernel in the first terms and then extract the anomalous piece because it gives you identically zero. And it turns out that actually it's the tails of that expansion that are important. So in 1+1 dimensions, this can be made precise. So in this case, we can really write down the wave functions. We can act with the Weyl operator and then find the spectrum, and then using some regularization prescription, extract the anomalous correction. However, there is one step that was basically missing, and so that's basically what we want to define. We want to find the square root of the one loop determinant, use the zeta function regularization, and calculate the partition function. So one crucial ingredient that we need, and basically that is lacking in higher dimensions, is basically the modular invariant. So at some point, we sort of need to employ. Sorry. At some point, we need to employ the modular invariants to extract the high temperature behavior. And what we also need, we need to find appropriate quantum operator to do that. So the point, the problem with Weyl operators is that it basically mixes between different chiralities. So the determinant of the Weyl operator is mathematically not a well defined object. That's why we sort of need to have a different object that we believe that will give us the same answer. And similar problem for zero temperature anomalies was worked out by Alvarez Gaume and Ginspark. So they suggested that instead of Weyl operator, we use this modified operator d hat, which is basically regular derivative plus the gauge field times the projection. So that would be our hint for the gauge theory part, and for the gravitational part, we would like to have something like this, but with the gravitational connection instead of A. And then, since this operator anti-commutes with gamma 5, then the eigenvalues comes in pairs, but only the so it's like doubling degrees of freedom, but at least the physics and the right anomalous contribution should be doable to extract. And that's precisely what we can do. So we can take our finite temperature torus, we can use the modified d hat operator, add gauge and gravitational connections, and then use modular invariants, and then calculate the partition function, which basically, so the imaginary part of this partition function precisely give us the anomalous corrections we need. And this is in fact in agreement with Cardy formula that can be derived in many different ways. So I would say that it would be very interesting to generalize that to higher dimensions. So there is some papers by Doker in which they propose, and also Cardy from the like beginning of 90s, in which they propose that there is some weaker invariants in higher dimensions, like 1 over t. It's not fully the modular invariants, but there is some invariants. So I think that in principle that might be possible to calculate these higher dimensional partition functions using using that approach. And then there is some papers that basically state that this partition function, which is like a Casimir energy because it's a vacuum energy, is related to the entanglement entropy. That's why through this logic one can hope to extract the anomalous corrections of entanglement entropy in higher dimensions. So that's something I'm currently thinking about, but without like definite results.
Even in 1D, what's or 1 plus 1D, what's the form of the contribution, which is anomalous?
So I don't have it here. I think Alejandro has it in the, what is the precise form of the anomalous contribution to the entanglement entropy in 1 plus 1 dimensions?
It basically depends on the rapidity of the how you much reduce the interval, but it's also like c. Well, here the anomaly would be c left minus c right.
Yeah.
Depends a lot of the like of how much the system is pushing.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And I think in 1 plus 1 dimensions, there is no contribution from the gauge anomaly. Or it's just the gravitational part that is there.
Yeah, you can, it depends on what kind of entanglement you're doing. If it's just plain vanilla entanglement, the only thing that you care about, if you think of it in terms of Swiss fields, you only care about the conformal dimensions of the Swiss fields, and that doesn't see a gauge anomaly. Mm-hmm. But if you want, if you define like a Reni or an entanglement entropy with chemical potential, then the U1 anomaly would be.
Okay. Yeah, so probably
like
current more
algebras will be important, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
You know that it just feels to be charged under that, under the U1 to see it.
Okay, to conclude, I think this. What we can presently do is basically to derive the anomalous transport in hydrodynamics in any even dimensions. We can derive that in 1 plus 1 dimensions using the heat kernel. So maybe there is some nice closed form also in higher dimensions, like some elliptic gamma functions. What I also find interesting is whether one can say something more about transport in odd dimensions. So there is no really regular anomalies, but the discrete symmetries can be broken in odd dimensions. So one can try to think whether there is some universality there. And of course, it would be nice to have some like experimental evidence for these effects. So recently there has been some hope to explore veil semi-metals, and there is some proposal that anomalies manifest themselves in the magnetoresistance of veil semi-metals. So maybe that's like one direction to explore. Maybe there is some other. So that's interesting to figure out. And maybe there is also like some more classical non-relativistic incarnations of anomalies, which then could be measured in more like soft condensed matter or like some more accessible systems, because like heavy ions are difficult to have under control, and also like veil semi-metals are not yet under such an experimental control to have like definite predictions. So I guess it's, I mean, maybe in future we'll have some more to say about that. Thank you.
Could you please go to the slide showing the new will theorem?
Which one?
The new will theorem. This is a semi-classical kinetic, semi-classical, yeah, this one. So you mentioned that you can modify the density of states or modify the measure, then you can restore the new will theorem, even though you have a normic. So I was wondering if there is any like geometrical interpretation for this modified density of states.
So I would say the picture is that if you have the barrier phase, the volume does not stay the same. So somehow it basically squashes your volume, but still you can basically tune it in such a way that the whole evolution is respects the Liouville theorem. I'm not sure if this provides like a geometric picture, but at least that's how I would visualize that.
So in computing this determinants, there was also some work not that long ago by Liu and collaborators where they looked at these partition functions but with a chemical potential turn on.
Mm-hmm.
So there they also had to consider like spectral flow as another transformation property.
But that was also in 1 plus 1?
Yeah, it was in 1 plus 1.
Okay.
But I was just curious, if you were familiar with that paper and how it compared, how the subtleties that you were pointing out here would affect that computation as well. Like if you have a mean parameter.
Yeah, I haven't thought of like direct connection, but maybe there is something there, so I have to maybe look it up.
Okay, because they just claim that they evaluate some determinant and it gives them like some theta functions, but
mm-hmm.
I'm just curious since you pointed out that it's subtle when you take the fermions to be like chiral, that also propagates to that case. When you're not just, you don't just have a function of tau, but a function of tau.
I guess it propagates, but I don't remember now at the technical level what are their setups, so I have to look it up.
Okay. I have one more question.
Okay.
So using this framework of kinetic theory and Boltzmann equation and thermodynamics,
mm-hmm.
did you guys get new predictions for actual observables, or which part is due to hydro and which part
is
sort of null from the
Kubo-like arguments? So, let's say the first prediction is due to hydrodynamics and entropy current. So then it fixes the transport properties of the U1 anomalies.
So I'm confused. What is C?
Some transport coefficients like eta, for example, like shear viscosity, but this is non-dissipative. But it's like first order transport coefficient. But gravitational anomalies are not fixed by this. So then you have to basically go to like partition function language. And that's why this kinetic theory might be useful from that perspective. Mm. So, I mean, the main prediction is that there is some transport that is due to anomalies. It's like there is some helicity current that flows of chiral species, and then the transport coefficient in front of that current is basically fixed by the anomaly. And the rest is like neat mathematical framework like people did for zero temperature anomalies that basically captures your transport properties like in one compact form. But yeah, I'm not sure how directly this is related to what people do in veil semi-metals, but I guess it might be interesting to explore if there is some connections and what are possible, like experimental predictions that can be made.
Because I mean, these terms, they said that Sparker probe is in heavy ions.
Yeah, because you know, in heavy ions, you just you know throw a bunch of nuclei at each other, and that there is like stuff that is there, and then it's difficult to probe. What do you get? So there is like huge amount of junk that you basically somehow want to get rid of, and it's you know even like sheer viscosity. It took people like many years to agree on what this is. You know whether it's strongly coupled and weakly coupled, and heavy ion experiments are like running for 20 years. So
far there's no good system to really probe this experiment.
So far there is no really a good system to probe it. So I think that at this time, like heavy ions are too challenging. So I would say that maybe some veil condensed matter systems are the closest we can get at the moment, but also I don't know how close we are, let's say.
It hasn't ended. It's... The claim is that they haven't discovered.
Okay.
All right, well, that's it. Thank you.